medical community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success.
Hello, JDE Connection listeners. Welcome back. I'm Chandra Wabshaw, one of your podcast hosts, and I'm the Business Solutions Lead at Colas IS Support. With me this week, and most weeks, is my friend and podcast partner, Paul Houtcooper, Vice President of JD Edwards Product Development at Oracle. You may have noticed I had to change it because I couldn't say with me this week and every week since you weren't with me last week. So I decided I had to change it.
I did notice that. I missed 1 week. And now your entire intro has to be reworked to call it out because, you know, we don't want to be misleading the folks. I mean, I'm not here every week, I guess. I mean, what are we going to say? Every week starting December 2025? I don't know. Whatever. Okay, fine. I wasn't here for 1 week. I apologize. But hey, you carried on. You did a solo run, a solo, what do you want to call it?
Episode.
And it went very well. I listened to it. Thank you very much. It was pretty cool.
Oh, thank you.
It was short and sweet and I think beneficial. And I think we should do more shorts here and there. Maybe we should have a few 15-minute episodes here and there on one short topic, a tool, an application, a functionality, whatever it happens to be, and occasionally mix those in for folks. You know, not everybody has 30 minutes to listen to us ramble on and talk about stuff. So
true. It was different. I'll say that. It was a little hard to just talk to myself, but that's okay. I got through it.
You feel better when you have somebody there interrupting like I am right now?
Exactly. I do. It feels more normal. It's hard to interrupt yourself.
Right.
Plus the element of fun, I feel like, is there when there's two of us to bounce things off of versus just me rambling. Sure. No one needs to hear what goes through my head on them.
I was going to say, don't you? I mean, you've got multiple voices up there. I'm sure you could have a fun conversation.
True story. Me, myself, and I, all three of us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, great job. Sorry I wasn't there for you last week. I was,
you know, sometimes business calls and you gotta do it.
Well, it's a combination of business and a little bit of personal. So
true.
As you and I have talked about whether or not others are interested in this, one of my daughters graduated from the University of Oregon with a degree in art history. And so I thought I would take her to somewhere where there is art and history. So when I went to Europe last couple of weeks, I took her with me. And so we did some touring and got to spend some quality time together. And she got to show off her skills. And I got to get edumacated on how to recognize Gothic architecture and how to, I'd say, decompose and analyze artwork. So it was pretty cool. It was a lot of fun.
That's awesome. I think it's super cool to be able to see, especially something that maybe you don't have, I don't want to say an interest in, but that level of passion for, to see it through somebody else's eyes, especially when it's your own child. I think it's fascinating. My daughter she was a history major, not art history, but history. So for me, going to museums with her is so rewarding to hear her be able to teach me and to learn it through seeing her passion come through. Mm-hmm. I find that very enjoyable.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And seeing my daughter get some level of validation, too. Because she was able to recognize many things, call them out, explain them to me. It was very rewarding for her to be able to do that. And that was a lot of fun. So I apologize for not being here. But
all good. I made it through.
Whew. Touch and go. Touch and go.
It was touch and go there. But I made it. So speaking of Europe, what were you doing and where were you?
Good question. I don't remember. No. Anyway. No. So we've been fortunate enough for many years to have the opportunity to do this. There's the AU sales team. So AU stands for Applications Unlimited. And for those listening that aren't familiar with Applications Unlimited at Oracle, that is the umbrella under which all Oracle's on-premise solutions fall. So eBusiness Suite, PeopleSoft, Siebel, Hyperion, JD Edwards. Okay. We all fall underneath that. And we have a dedicated sales team for that group of products. And each year they do what they call is AU sales days, or what we call is the European tour. And we go around a series of cities, basically meeting and presenting to customers. In this particular case, we went to Milan, we went to Madrid, Utrecht, Birmingham, and Paris. I wasn't able to make it to Milan, but I was able to make it to Madrid and Utrecht, and then come back to the States for Thanksgiving, and then go back for Birmingham and Paris. And again, depending on how familiar you are with the JD Edwards ecosystem worldwide, in the US, we have regional user groups, right? We know Packerland user group, Southeastern user group. We know the Houston user group. We know the Southern California user group, yeah. Right? Yeah. You know, all of those. And if I missed one, I apologize. I know there's maybe others. But in Europe, we also have regional user groups. So there's the Benelux user group. There's the Spanish user group. There's the UK OUG as well. So they're organized by region as well. And so this time around, we partnered with some of those regional user groups to put on these AU Sales Days events so that we could get both business partners as well as product development representation and try to gather a wider audience, recognizing that not all of our customers outside the US are able to make it to our two major in-person conferences a year that we do through Quest, which of course is Blueprint 4D in the spring/summer, and In Focus, which we do in Denver in the fall. We seek out this opportunity to touch base and kind of carry our message outside the US to those groups that couldn't make it. It's a great opportunity to connect with those customers that you wouldn't normally see at our events here in the States.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm glad that you are able to do that, because that is a trek. It would be like for me if we had a piece of software that was from overseas, trying to get approval to get over for the conference, the time differences, the travel budget. Mm-hmm. That's big. So I'm glad that there are opportunities for them to also get updated on what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, there was over 800 registrants in total across all of these cities and all of these events. I think there was over 600 attendees. So it's sure small potatoes compared to something like AI World in Vegas, but it's still a significant, you know, turnout and good opportunity. So
great. What were some of the things that you did over there? I mean, you mentioned that there were obviously meetings in Madrid, Utrecht, Birmingham, and Paris. Was it like a mini conference, like a day mini conference where maybe you had meetings with customers? There was like a keynote or something similar, roadmap presentation. Were there, vendor events?
Yeah. So I think describing it as a mini conference, it's basically a conference in a day, if you will. So you have a keynote at the beginning of the day, typically, and then you have roadmap breakout sessions for each one of the product areas. So the registrants, depending on what product they're interested in, they go to the different roadmap presentations. And then we usually do customer roundtables after that. And there's demos, product demos done by some of our pre-sales teams. And they go through and demo some of the latest and greatest stuff that, you know, we've delivered, and field questions. And there's one-on-one meetings as well. So again, it's a great opportunity to sit down one-on-one with IT leadership at these customers. Matter of fact, I got to talk to your company. If you'd like to know what you're doing in France, I can tell you,
Well, good. I'm glad you had the opportunity to talk with, I assume, is it Stefan?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah,
Stefan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in France. Very cool. That's awesome. Yeah. I'm very excited that you had that opportunity.
It was pretty funny to sit down with him and thank him for hiring my podcast partner. He was like, what?
That's funny.
Like, talk about a small world, right? You know, we sit down and say, well, first of all, before we get started, I just wanted to thank you for hiring my podcast partner. He's like, oh my gosh, what? So it was pretty cool. He knows about the podcast and he wanted a selfie at the end to send to your leadership here in the States. And to kind of say, hey, look who I ran into. So anyway, I thought it was pretty funny, but yeah. So that's kind of the structure. And then of course, yes, there's dinners sometimes. That's about it, I guess. It feels like a full week conference because what it is you'll do one city on Tuesday, you'll do another city on Thursday. So you fly in, probably have a dinner the night before, then you do the event, have a bunch of customer meetings. And then the next morning you wake up, you jump on a plane, you go to the next country, you land, you have dinner, you go to the next event, you know, and then,
oh, wow.
And you try to have customer meetings occasionally, like in areas where we have a really strong concentration of business partners. There's also an opportunity for like a partner briefing, just like we do at Blueprint 4D and in Focus. And so, you know, I'll do that as well. So it's an intense few days for sure. It's also very rewarding. But for me, I focus on a product update, basically giving him the updated version. We just released 26, and we're already focused on what we're delivering in Q2 next year and working on those things. And so it's an opportunity for me to not only update him on what's basically transpired since in Focus till now and, you know, what we're planning on. And again, you're trying to inspire and motivate and get people excited about the product and what they're able to do. As you know, in Blueprint this year and again at InFocus, adoption has been one of those kind of major themes that we're focusing on, right? Don't get stuck in the past, 2005 versus 2025. Focus on adoption, those sorts of things. And that continues to resonate. So in both my trip to Utrecht and Madrid, as well as this last one in Birmingham and Paris, I had multiple customers come up and talk to me about their struggles. So it is a common struggle, and they're looking for direction, ideas on how to incorporate this into their operations. So there was many conversations had about that and what stands in the way of it and what influences it. Where does IT sit? Is it aligned with its own IT structure, like a, say, a CIO, or is it aligned with the CFO? I mean, is it with the business or is it separate, right? That can influence it. How do they look at ERP? How do they look at JD Edwards? Is it a system of record and a necessary evil, or is it a necessary evil? But you know what I mean? It's the cost of doing business, or is it an asset and a tool that can be leveraged to actually improve how you operate? What you do as a company influences this. So if you're primarily services-based, maybe how you leverage JD Edwards is completely different than the role it plays in a manufacturer if you're manufacturing a product.
Absolutely.
Those sorts of things influence it. I mean, this leads to one of the other conversations that I had. Are you centralized or decentralized? This influences adoption as well, right?
Yes, absolutely. Well, and I think what I've seen in the last several years is I feel like years and years ago, everything was centralized. Then we moved decentralized. Now the pendulum is swinging back centralized. Mm-hmm. I feel like it changes, and I feel like it's going to change again. There's pros and cons to both. It makes it more difficult from a support perspective when you're supporting a decentralized organization and you have multiple companies, business units, whatever you want to refer to them as, and they all do things a little bit differently. It does make it more challenging. I feel like you end up with more technical debt because you have customized versions, multiple different versions of sales order entry because they do this just a little bit differently than this company does it, or this branch, however you might look at it. But then that allows, though, for some creativity and allows entrepreneurial activity that maybe you don't get in a more centralized where you have to choose one method over another. So there's pros and cons to both. I don't know which is right, in air quotes, is what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I mean, what fits your business, right? What makes the most sense for your business and your culture? Yeah, absolutely. You can argue both sides, actually. I think you could say a decentralized model, because of the freedom that it gives you, can enable you to innovate and therefore maybe adopt more rapidly. I don't know, or in different ways. But at the same time, if you're trying to roll out something and get leverage out of, say, an AI initiative, you may find that you're not going to be able to accomplish that. You're not going to be able to roll out the new XYZ capability within JD Edwards and get leverage consistently throughout your company if you've got 20X divisions and they're all operating differently and there's no central change control and there's no central model for these things. So again, while you've empowered them to do what they need to do to make themselves successful, and that there's definite benefit to that, when you have those other major, say, corporate-wide initiatives, well, that maybe creates barriers for that. And so I'm seeing a lot of the conversation I'm having, what you said is that the pendulum swings one way, swings back the other, and now it's swinging back to centralized. And I think there's a lot of different reasons for that, right? A lot of different reasons for companies to be looking at their current structure, how they're structured, and wanting to now centralize in order to get leverage. And eventually they'll do that. Perhaps they'll be successful with that. And then maybe they grow out of it. And to your point, the pendulum swings back the other way in, you know, another 5 years or whatever. I do find maybe it's technological advancement that causes that motivation to say, let's bring this back in, whether it be cloud, AI, et cetera, that next advancement when you want to suddenly move fast and you want to gain synergy quickly and you want to make quantum leaps. It's very difficult to do that when you've got X number of disparate versions of what you're doing. And so I'm guessing that may be the motivation these days for why people are trying to centralize again. What I thought was funny, I mean, I didn't have as many conversations around AI.
Really?
Yeah. You know, I went back through all my notes and I don't know that AI came up in my one-on-one discussions, which really, truly surprised me, because usually people come with an agenda and they kind of hit me up and time goes quickly. And unfortunately, I don't necessarily get the opportunity to reciprocate and say, okay, well, here's my list of questions of all the things I want to know from my customers, which one of would have been like, how are your AI initiatives going? And what are you hearing? And in this particular case, there just wasn't that much interest in talking about AI. There was more interest in talking about adoption and talking about how do you centralize? Like when you've got 15 different versions of JD Edwards and each one of those versions has different third parties that they've attached to, what's a good strategy for going about and selecting and commonizing and without alienating groups? Like that's just an easy one that I have right up my sleeve. And I just, oh,
you just got that right in your back.
I'm sorry.
Pocket.
I've got that.
Let me give you the flow chart for that.
Here's the centralized playbook. I've got it right here. Don't worry. It just cost you a beer and we're good. No, I, you know.
Wow. So. If that's the case, you need to rethink your career. And
yeah, no kidding. Yeah,
exactly. Right?
Exactly.
You have that answer.
But one last thing. And I mean, as far as an update on these things, we have fans. Turns out we have fans.
In Europe?
Yes. Yes, we do. I always bring up the podcast and remind people how many of you are BAs out there or SAs, systems analysts. And you see that, and it's like, okay, you need to listen to the podcast. But then I also ask, how many have your managers of, or your CIOs or IT directors or whatever, how many of you have folks, you need to point them in this direction? And how many are aware of this already? And, you know, in every venue, hands went up, which is really nice. The most hands went up in my last venue, which was Paris. There was a fair number of hands that actually went up in the room, which was pretty cool. And then afterwards, yes, I had a few folks from those companies come up and say hi and thank us for doing this podcast. And they're like, oh my God, we listen to the podcast and they really like what we're doing and they really appreciate the value that we're bringing and the stories that we bring and the resources that we bring and the people that we bring on and the interviews that we do. They're really liking that. And so anyway, it was neat. It's cool to see that and to get that feedback. So I wanted to bring that back and let you know, because we don't see it every day, right?
No, we don't.
Yeah,
right.
We don't hear
very often.
not as often as we would like.
Yeah, exactly. We don't hear from people that often. So it's nice. You know, I think those in-person events is where I feel like we get more of the validation, if you will, that what we're doing is making a difference versus just talking to the air. I don't know. That was me last week.
Yeah.
Just talking to the air.
But the tool that you let everybody know about is going to be something that somebody's going to have to go check out and somebody's going to get value from. I hate to actually admit this, but I didn't know what 95110 was. I was like, what? I never had to use it. I was always an FDA. So that's where I went. I had no idea that this application actually existed and I never used it. So when you described it as I was listening, I was like, oh, that's awesome. That's pretty cool. I wish I would have known about that.
Makes you wonder, like, what else don't I know about?
Yeah. What other things do we have out there? So, yeah, but who knows?
I'm just really excited to stumble across it. So That's why I shared it, because I found it to be very helpful and thought it might be, like I said on the pod, that I feel like sometimes being in OMW and checking out objects, it gives me sweaty palms because it's not native to me. As a developer, you're used to being in there. You're used to, I'm always worried I'm going to screw something up.
Well, you can't. I mean, that's the other thing. But you don't have to check it out in order to browse it. That was one thing that I was like, why are you worried about checking in a change? Because you don't have to check out an object in order to go look at an object. You just put it to your default project. And when you go out there, you open it up. It tells you that you haven't checked it out. It's like, yeah, that's okay. I don't want to check it out. I'm not making any changes. So you don't have to be scared of OMW because you're scared you got to check something out in order to see it. No, you don't have to check it out in order to browse it and whatnot. And, you know, you can even make changes to it and save it locally and not have to worry about it being checked in and hurting anybody. So anyway, but I understand what you're saying. This is a risk-free way of looking at stuff. And I understand. I get it. So
yeah,
cool.
Awesome. Right. Well, with that, I think it's time for our Midwesternism. So this one came to me courtesy of one of my friends in my running group. On Tuesday evenings, I meet with a local group of women and run. And I had mentioned to one of them that I do a podcast, and they had asked what it was about. And I told them, you know, it's about software. They're like, oh. But we talked a little, obviously, more about, from my perspective as a customer, from your perspective as the leader of the development of the organization. And, you know, I said, but we always do something fun at the end. We wrap it up with a Midwesternism, because I'm originally from Minnesota, and Paul, my podcast partner, grew up in Wisconsin for 10 years of his life. Probably doesn't remember a lot of Midwesternisms, but she came back a week later. She's like, oh, I was telling my significant other about your podcast and Midwesternisms, and he asked if you knew about this one. And I was like, I have never heard that one. So I looked it up and I was like, oh my gosh, well, now I know why, because it's from Wisconsin, really.
Ah, that's why. No.
Okay. Exactly. I try not to cross that border very often and go visit the cheeseheads, but sometimes you have to pass through the state. But anyway, the Midwesternism that we're going to talk about this week is cannibal sandwiches.
I can only imagine what these are.
Yeah, it's a traditional, but of course, controversial holiday appetizer of fresh, raw ground beef mixed with chopped onion, salt, and pepper, served on rye bread or crackers. So this tradition stems from German raw meat dishes that were brought to the States by immigrants. And obviously, while it's loved locally, for special occasions, health officials do warn against it due to bacteria risks of eating raw meat. But many Wisconsinites enjoy it as a cultural staple. Sometimes they refer to it as tiger meat or steak tartare.
Really?
Yeah, which I thought was appropriate to cover, being that you were just in France, where I do believe tartare is quite popular.
It is. It's actually perfect timing on your behalf. Yeah, that's what I was thinking as you were describing it. I was like, wait a second, this is comes over from German. I was like, well, I was just in France and they have it on every menu. So this is Wisconsin's attempt at getting super fancy, I guess.
Yes.
Because we eat tartare. If you go to Paris and eat tartare, I mean, you're, yay, let's get some tartare. Let's get some foie gras. Like, you know. But in Wisconsin, we're going to call it a cannibal sandwich. So we're going to take the fancy out of it. Just call it what it is, just raw meat. So it's just a cannibal sandwich. I mean, I would eat it. I've tried tatar in Paris. It's very good.
I was going to ask if you did have it on this trip.
Not on this trip. I did not. So okay. I did have foie gras. I think that's how you say it, which is duck liver. And that was really good. That I really did enjoy. But I happen to like liver. So there you go. So
I guess you are Midwestern. You like liver.
Well, yeah, I grew up on Braunschweiger sandwiches. Okay. So it actually was pretty funny. So my mom used to make Braunschweiger sandwiches, which she would just take toast, smear on the Braunschweiger, put on a leaf of iceberg lettuce and a tomato and slap the other piece of bread on it. And it was great. Right. So I show up at this restaurant in Paris with my daughter and I'm like, oh, I'm going to get this foie gras. And they serve it out. And what is it? It's sliced pate, you know, duck liver pate, and they have some crackers or bread that you can smear it on, and they have literally lettuce and a tomato. And I'm like, this is too funny. So the fact that
you felt
so
at
I
home.
See that I felt at home. So I'm like, wow, that's just like, you know, at home. And then you find this cannibal sandwich, and I'm looking at the steak tartare in Paris, and I'm listening to this, and I'm going, these are the same thing. I mean, that's awesome. I'll be sure to bring this to my next holiday party.
You should. I think that should be your, you know, if you have an office holiday party, I think that should be on the menu.
Yeah, absolutely. The next potluck? Absolutely. And I'm not going to make some fancy, like, loaf out of this thing. I mean, it's just going to be a pile of raw meat just right there.
And then we'll see if it... to get all of your coworkers sick. Fabulous.
Yes. Perfect. What could possibly go wrong?
Nothing and everything. Nice. Well, for questions, feedback, or ideas for future episodes, contact us at the JDEConnection@QuestOracleCommunity.org. Until next time, let's keep learning, sharing, and most importantly, laughing together. Toodles.
See ya. Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at questoraclecommunity.org/JDE Connection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest JD Edwards community, visit our website at questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.